WATD presents John Paul, the Car Doctor. All things automotive. Have questions? Call 781-837-4900. Now, here's John Paul, the Car Doctor.
And good Sunday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. Jesse, are we working the way we're supposed to today?
I can't believe it. It works.
Well, absolutely. Look at that. Well, we are still running a bit of a handicap because Jesse's in a temporary studio because they're totally remodeling the WATD main studio. So it's a little bit of a challenge, but look at that. It's working just the way it's supposed to. Well, it's Easter weekend, and happy Easter to everyone. Hopefully. And I got that. Was the pun on purpose there, Jesse? Hop into? Was that part of the Easter Bunny hop?
It wasn't. I'm just accidentally hilarious sometimes, and you know, it just goes right over my head.
Well, you know, it's good when the comedy writes itself, I suppose. This week, there was a preview for the New York Auto Show, and I haven't been to the New York Auto Show in a couple of years. I think the first year, during COVID, I think it got canceled. And then subsequently, I think I was in Florida and didn't bother flying up from Florida to New York to go to the auto show. But I do miss going to the auto show. And one of the people I used to hang around at the auto show with is on the line with us, Larry Iden. I've known Larry for a bunch of years now. We used to work together with the Ford AAA Student Auto Skills Competition. Larry, good morning, and thanks for joining us on the Car Doctor program.
Well, good morning, John. I'm happy to be here, and happy Easter to you and all your listeners, and a nice Sunday for those who aren't an Easter person.
Well, it's always nice to have a Sunday where maybe you get together with family and friends, whether it's a Easter holiday or any Sunday, just to get together. But I wanted to talk to you because you were going out. In fact, you called me the day before the preview day at the New York Auto Show to ask if I was going, and you realized I was in Florida and said, well, that probably answers that question. But the New York Auto Show over the years, it was kind of an odd show because it was sort of at the end of the auto show season. And sometimes I remember there was, seemed like it was a little bit of a struggle to get something new and exciting at the show. But over the years, I saw cars fall out of the ceiling and, a big reveals. Some of them were new to the United States, some of them were new to the region, and some were new to the world. And I always learned a lot when I went there. Last year, the auto show was a little bit quiet. How was it this year?
Well, I can only go by what I remember pre-COVID. I was thinking about that earlier today. The COVID obviously stopped the New York Auto Show in its tracks, and this is my first time back, and I was trying to remember, I don't know whether this is the third time since COVID or the second time that they've had the show, but I know that the show took place last year. The show was certainly different than previous years in my memories. As you recall, or those who have ever been to the Javits Center, there's an upper and lower level, and it used to be just chock full of space, of vehicles on the main floor. The lower floor was typically dedicated to trucks. And then due to the expansion and whatever, there was a outer section of the Javits that was used, which has now been rebuilt into a more permanent structure that was also used. I remember seeing the Chevrolet and the Chevrolet reveal and some Cadillac over there in the years. So to compare it to that, this year, the main floor was, I guess I would comfortably say full, but it had a few little outliers in specialty vehicles. In the lower level was almost specifically dedicated to the test track for the EVs. And they had a lot of folks who could, you had four different manufacturers that you could take electric vehicle rides with. So it's a lot different. And that outer section was not used at all other than for the awards release in the morning. So it was quite different from my perspective.
And it really looked like, looking at some of the notes and pictures that I saw, it looked like the big reveals and the big concept cars were coming from vehicles that 20 years ago we never heard of, like Hyundai and Kia.
Yeah, I would say that's right. I mean, I was personally intrigued with Polestar because I knew nothing really about them. And I guess they released their all-electric vehicle manufacturer out of Sweden, I believe it was. And they had a smaller vehicle than the one that they already had out existing that they revealed, which is kind of interesting. One of the little aspects of that vehicle was the fact that there's actually no rear window.
Mm.
So the only rear vision that one has is from the camera that's placed back there, or cameras, I'm not sure, and then the screen in the vehicle. Now, at that reveal, when they were talking about that, they showed the typical mirror image, and then 2.5-3 times larger was what you would see by virtue of the camera. So I guess they were trying to sell you on the fact that while you had no direct view, you had an indirect view that was far superior to what the mirror would show.
Well, and it's sort of interesting. I remember being in, I think it was a GM vehicle that had either, it was a conventional mirror or, depending if you push the button, the mirror was actually a display from a camera. And it was a crisp, clear picture, and if there were people sitting in the back seat, there was no heads in the way because you weren't looking at the mirror. You were actually seeing a view of the camera. But the difference was my close-up vision is not as good as it used to be. So when I looked at the mirror that was the, for want of a better word, the TV display, it was a little blurry. When I flipped it over to the regular mirror, now all of a sudden I'm looking at the mirror that's looking at where it's going, and it was my distance vision that was working the way it's supposed to. So I wonder if there's a way they'll compensate for that sort of thing, or it's just that people wear glasses and that's all there is to it.
Well, I guess, but yeah. Sadly, is you know, with glasses, normally it's not perfect. We're not getting
right.
Back to where we were. We're getting improved vision from our old vision, but the cameras seem to be more commonplace nowadays, and I see where there's a value to the fact that you could, you know, have better rearward vision.
Yeah,
I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I have two vehicles. I'm sitting in one at the moment, and both of the vehicles, I've removed the headrests for the rear seats for two reasons. First of all, nobody normally sits back there, but the specific reason for me was better rearward vision, because otherwise I've got these two big headrests sticking up, blocking what I like to think of as, you know, what I should be looking at. So,
yeah, my wife has a 2015 Volkswagen Beetle convertible, and the first thing she had me do when I brought the car home was take out the rear head restraints, and nobody ever sits in the back seat ever. But she's like, I can't see. Those got to go. And I'm like, I don't want them to go. They should be there. She said, no, I can't see with them there. They got to go. And I said, well, the only thing, you know, if you do ever bring our nieces in the car or anything, let me know and we'll put them back in where they belong. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes that's the case, and you're right, with better rear visibility. And I noticed with I was reading or watching something about the Tesla Cybertruck, which is either a love it or hate it sort of thing, but they made the side view mirrors are there because National Highway Traffic Safety and DOT says vehicles got to have side view mirrors, but they have very sophisticated side view cameras, and they've made the mirrors almost removable with no tools. So if you wanted to do away with them, you could do away with them, and their camera system probably works better than the mirrors do, but they kind of have to stick the mirrors on there for perceived safety purposes. So it is kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I've not seen that, but I could agree with that. Yeah.
Well, in the town that I'm in, there's a YouTuber who's a big fan of Tesla vehicles, and he just got a Tesla Cybertruck, and he put bullhorns on the front of it.
Oh, geez.
So sort of interesting. Yeah, and the other thing I was looking at, or it was on a webinar or something the other day, and there was somebody from Chrysler there, and Chrysler obviously doesn't have a lot of vehicles these days. I think they have a minivan and not much else. But Chrysler, and somebody asked if Chrysler was going to be there with, they have a couple of concept cars built on something they call their Stella platform, and Chrysler said no, due to the negotiation with the unions this time around, they were opting out of most auto shows. But I guess Jeep still had their off-road thing set up in front of Javits, right?
They did. They and Ford both had off-road, and I had the opportunity because there was a smaller crowd, obviously, on the media day, to for the first time actually partake of that Jeep ride. So I did the Ford first, and they used the Ford Bronco Raptor, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And that was pretty impressive. The product specialist was quite familiar with the vehicle. And they take, I don't know if you've ever been on the rides, but one of the two big things seem to be, other than the sneakiness and that they're capable of doing, is the tilting, so that the vehicle tilted to about 30-plus degrees to the side. Now, that's obviously nothing that most people ever experience in their driving career, if they're accident-free especially.
Yeah.
So it's unnerving, and it's quite different. And what she did, and I thought this was pretty interesting, because not only did it show the feature, but it showed the impact of the feature. They can lock and unlock the front stabilizer bar.
Mm.
So we were in one position. She unlocked the front stabilizer bar, and the car settled back down because it allowed the right side to stay up and the left side to go down, because it was the ramp was built so that the left side rose.
Mm.
So I thought that was pretty impressive. And then we went around to the I don't know what we exactly call it, like the hill climb, and that was a 40-degree rise. And 40 degrees is pretty significant if you've never experienced it. Because as soon as I went up, I mean, you lose sight of anything other than the sky. And the ride was pretty interesting, a little unnerving for me because my first time doing it. Mm. And the Jeep, this is Ford now. The Jeep one was pretty much the same with that 40-degree climb. And I felt when I was on the Jeep one, it reminded me of going on a roller coaster where you first start out and then you have that part that I hate. I like roller coasters, but I hate the ride up. And that's, you know, when you're going click, 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 and it's going up. I said, just get me there and let me go and let me go spin around a bit.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what it reminded me of. But it was that was the only place that I saw a Jeep anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, to answer your question, that's about where we were.
Yeah. And there was they brought in some exotic cars, I guess, that from some of the dealers to probably try to bring a little bit more excitement to the show. Right. There was some Ferraris and Lamborghinis or something there.
They had a couple of different areas that the vehicles were in. There was a dedicated section on the main level for new high-end exotic cars.
Mm.
And then on the lower level, where the test track was not, there were multiple displays of some quite interesting cars. I mean, people had collected cars over the years. I mean, one of them was a Jaguar that had, you know, been raced, but it was a sedan, you know, that they used in one of the series. And so there was a lot of extra stuff to see like that. I guess it depends on what you're looking for. Myself, I'm partial to what's the latest reveal on, I guess I'd almost say, realistic streetcars.
Right.
So, you know, a $250,000 Maserati, while it might be very interesting, is out of my league, and I'm happier to look at maybe the new Mustang Dark Horse or the Mustang, they had the GT D, I believe it was.
Yeah.
They had that special vehicle, and you had, you know, nice access. They had people from, at least in the Mustang display, they had nice folks from Ford themselves, not product reps. You know, like there was a guy from Mustang development team. So, you know, he's working in Dearborn, and he's the guy that made a lot of that happen, which, so he's not looking in the book for the answer. He's just pulling it out of his head.
Yeah, I actually saw the Mustang Dark Horse at an auto show. I mean, at a Cars and Coffee event one day, and I kind of walked by and went, "Whoa, what's that?" You know, and the idea that, you know, somebody had already bought one. They must have put their name on the list early to get it, and a pretty impressive car with, I think, the Dark Horse is, I don't know, 500 and some odd horsepower, so pretty impressive car. And somebody, actually, it's kind of funny, someone wrote to me the other day, and they said they listen to the radio show, and they read some of my articles, and they said, I haven't got you figured out yet. One minute you're talking about 10,000 horsepower, you know, nitro funny cars, and the next minute you're talking about electric cars. You know, what's the deal with you? Do you like electric cars? Do you like gasoline cars? And my answer was, well, you sort of found me out. If it's got wheels and tires on it, I kind of like it. And yeah, you know, the fantasy of the, you know, the crazy high horsepower drag cars, or, you know, something that, you know, gets 50 miles to the gallon, or maybe runs on electricity. They all have a place, I think, somewhere. You know, can I afford any of them? Probably not. And I'm the same way. I would rather sometimes see the newest, I mean, it sounds so boring, I'd rather see the newest Toyota Camry than see that Ferrari with the unpronounceable Italian name, because I can probably buy a Camry. I'm not going to buy a Ferrari.
Right. I did, and that's it. And I guess that's why the show is as diverse as it is to some degree this year. You know, I think it was multifaceted that the way they did it, because, as we've already said, the manufacturer turnout is down. So, you know, Mazda was absent. They've been absent from just about everything. The Chrysler was gone. Earlier in the year, they had the Connecticut Auto Show, because as you realize, I'm in Connecticut. I'm not sure if your listeners do. But that was, you know, certainly downsized from what it was. And there were a lot of the manufacturers missing there, too. But one of the things that they did, obviously, was to fill back in at the New York show with a lot of the either clubs that had specialty vehicles and brought them in, or different registries that had special cars. That if you were really a fan of, like, there were a lot of Porsches displayed. Mm-hmm. And those are probably on the cusp between that $250,000-$300,000 Maserati and maybe the Dark Horse. So, you know, for somebody who's a little more affluent, they might be able to buy the Porsche and drive the Porsche. So I think that probably brought a lot of people in. I have no idea what the attendance is going to look like for the year. You know, that'll probably be announced. I think normally they were over a million, but that was pre-COVID, and that was probably when the show was different. Mm. So the one thing I did see a lot of, and I was kind of not surprised, was the influence of electric vehicles and to make it a little broader, electrification. So there was electric vehicles, obviously, and I'm getting, you know, most folks realize that there's electric vehicles and there's hybrid vehicles of different stature. You know, the basic hybrid, if you want to call it, the plug-in hybrid, which is sort of the next step up, and then both using an internal combustion engine as support, and then the fully electric vehicle. So while the vehicle, well, the fully electric vehicle was talked a lot about, you saw, I think, more reality with the hybrid, whether it be just the straight one or the plug-in. They had a very nice, it was a, I guess you'd call it an EV press conference. That's how they had it billed. But it was a round table, and there was a half a dozen folks there. Mark Scheinberg from the Car Association for New York, yep. The Greater New York Auto Dealers Association, moderated it. And he called on a couple of different people, and I can't remember all of who was who, but there was somebody from, I believe there was somebody from AAA. I believe there was somebody from, it escapes me right now, but there was also somebody from the Electric Vehicle Authority for the state of New York.
Oh, okay.
And his comments, I think, summed it up well. And this is how I felt myself, that it's the infrastructure issue that's going to be the make or break for the electric vehicles. Right now, there's not enough infrastructure, and there's not enough mental capacity for people to say, okay, well, 300-mile trip is okay. I think everybody's looking for, like, maybe four. I don't know what the magic number is that they think. But there was a lot of talk about New York State building an infrastructure, supporting that infrastructure, and then also having trip planners that people could use who had electric vehicles so that they could decide, you know, if they were going to Ohio or something, how could they get through New York? Where would the stations be? What's realistic for them to do? So the thought is out there, but the general consensus of opinion at the end, because the question that Mark asked at the end was, what do you see the industry looking like in 5 or 10 years? So they kind of went around. And I'll back up just a step, because the talk was that electric vehicles sort of have peaked as far as percentage of sales. So where they were at one point maybe 12%, I think they're maybe down to like 9%. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going away, but, you know, the early adapters, the early ones who wanted to get on that bandwagon have, and now you're seeing resistance, I think, from that infrastructure. But down the road, they're thinking that it's going to take, you know, 10 or 20 years before the electric vehicle becomes more commonplace, in that it's still going to be somewhat of a percentage of the, you know, automotive population in general.
Yeah, so, I mean, I said a couple of years ago, and I'm probably wrong, but I said, you know, in 25 or 30 years, maybe gasoline cars, pure gasoline cars, will be as rare as a car with a clutch pedal. You know, we don't see a lot of cars with clutch pedals these days. And maybe in 30 years, you know, the idea that a car that only runs on gasoline is going to be almost that unique. It's going to be a hybrid or a plug-in hybrid, like you said, or a pure electric car. And you're right about infrastructure, especially in New York. We have purchased at AAA 35 Ford Lightning pickup trucks to do road service because we're trying to be environmentally friendly and all that stuff. So we bought these Lightning pickup trucks. And at certain locations, We've put in the level 3 440 volt chargers. In Manhattan, where our fleet garage is, in the upper or lower end of Manhattan, I guess is the right description, we can't get 440 volts delivered there, so we have to charge off of 240 volt level 2 because the infrastructure is just not there in this end of town. So right. You're right to be able to have, you know, that infrastructure. And the same thing, you know, I live in a small seasonal cottage in the summertime, and I live in a mobile home the rest of the time. Well, the cottage has 100-amp electrical service that is not stressed too much because the only 240-volt thing I have is a water heater. So, you know, could I put maybe a 30-amp 240-volt plug at the corner of the house to plug in an electric car? Maybe. Here, I have 150-amp electrical service. Well, I have an electric stove, an electric water heater, air conditioning, electric heat. Probably not. So the infrastructure for me to be able to do that is somewhat limited. And really, to have an electric car, it really makes a ton of sense if you can charge at home, because it makes it that much more convenient. And the idea that you're waking up every morning and you're driving to work with a 250, 300-mile range and it's fully charged every day is better than most people on the road do, because, you know, we probably do 10,000 out of gas calls over the course of a week because people forget to look at their gas gauge.
Yeah. To that point, what do you do if someone calls in that has an electric car that's out of charge? I guess send a wrecker, right? Or
we'll usually send a flatbed, because most of the time people run out of electricity, you know, on the highway somewhere. So yeah. we do have about a dozen trucks now, and it's a little bit of a kind of a weird contrary thing, because we send basically an F-350 utility body truck with a gasoline generator in the back of it. So we're sending a gasoline burning car with a gasoline burning generator to charge up an electric vehicle, which sounds a little backwards. But it's the one system that, when we were looking to do this, it was the only product on the market that met all of the United Underwriter Laboratories approval. So we want to make sure we keep people safe. But on the side of the road, we don't want to sit there for 30 minutes on the side of, you know, Route 95 or Route 84 with cars whizzing by, because sure. every day a tow truck driver gets hit by, you know, not ours necessarily, but every day a tow truck driver gets hit by a car. So we don't want to put the member in that situation, and more importantly, we don't want to put our employees in that situation. So what we'll do is typically we'll go out and we'll just tow the car to a charging station or the person's home, depending where they want to go. Yeah. But we do have the ability, and we've done it a few times, where somebody's, you know, run out of charge in a parking lot somewhere. So we send out a truck and, you know, we sit there for half an hour and, you know, put, you know, 20 miles of charge back in the car, and then they can go off in their way and find a charging station or get home if it's close enough. So sure. we're looking into all of this in the future to be able to do that. Right now, we're not able to do, and it's mostly not us, it's Ford. We were hoping at some point with these Lightning trucks, we'd be able to do kind of DC to DC charging right off the battery pack.
Because
they can do that with a plug you can sort of plug into your house, providing you have sort of a power wall sort of thing in between. But we're looking to do that. There's a couple of companies out there that now have completely solid state level 2 and level 3 charging. The level 3 charging are these big kiosks. And it really what it is it's a ton of electric vehicle batteries inside of it to power it. You pull up with your electric car, and it's sort of like going to the ATM. You put your card in, you plug in, you sit there for a little while, and it charges up. And there's no necessary infrastructure around it. That only has to be plugged into 110 or 240 volts. The completely solid-state portable chargers are sort of level 2. A few of the AAA clubs have purchased some of those. It's a Boston company called Spark Charge. Real interesting company. They actually got their first venture capital money came out of going on that TV show Shark Tank, and they got a couple of the sharks. Yeah, they had a couple of the sharks to invest, and then they got like another $25 million in venture capital and to expand to this newer product. But you know, those kind of things are out there. Just not yet. When I was listening to the people from Stellantis talk about their latest thought on electric cars, they have a roadway set up in Germany where it's a inductive charging roadway. So as you drive on this, what will be a toll road, I guess, as you drive on the road, you can actually charge your vehicle as you're driving.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I thought that might actually be something. I thought about that some years ago in a variant as far as that charging aspect
yeah.
of, you know, they have wireless phone charging, So to take away the stigma of having to get out of your car and plugging into an electrical outlet on your car that many might find, you know, either scary or difficult, that if you could outfit your garage with a big, basically, pad that when you drove in, it just wirelessly charged your car and you had to do nothing, that would be the step forward. And I spoke with a gentleman who represented a Chinese battery company down at the show, and I asked him about that, and he said, it's conceivable, but it's extremely expensive.
Yeah,
So that, you know, you can understand that, you know, that's just sort of stillborn.
But yeah.
What I did want to share with you, and I thought this was pretty interesting, the one thing that I talked to, and I'm not sure, I honestly, after a while, some of it runs together, and I didn't jot down who it was, but I think it might have been the folks at Subaru, but bear with me if I have it wrong. But what they were talking about was having basically a fully electric car, but with a small generator on board, so that when the vehicle reached a certain point, let's say on battery charge, the generator would kick in and would replenish the batteries sufficient for the vehicle to be drivable. However, if because it was an electric car and it had maybe a 250-mile range, that might not ever be used.
Mm.
But the beauty part to me is that it was there, that it's kind of the I don't know if I want to call it a bi-fuel, but that's what it reminds me of, because you may recall I had one of those bi-fuel gas and CNG cars. But I don't want to get off onto that one. But I liked that idea a lot, and that's what I thought originally, that the Chevrolet Volt, the one with the V,
yep,
the first one, that I thought the Chevrolet Volt was built like. I assumed incorrectly that the electric motor, the internal combustion engine there, only acted as a generator. But, and that's what General Motors wanted you to think if you read most of that stuff. And in reality, it would actually link up to the drive system in the car as necessary on an as-needed basis.
Yeah.
Because I saw where if you could just put a generator, you could slide anything you wanted in. You could put CNG. You could put diesel. You know, it does need to be a big, you know, maybe a 30-horse diesel, 25-horse diesel, like out of a little tractor or something. You know, it could be like almost a power plant, like sliding that generator in the motorhome. You know, there it is. But to me, that makes a lot of sense in being able to transition people to basically a fully electric vehicle, but with that backup as needed.
Yeah, I have to say I was a little disappointed with the Volt the same way, because I was at one of our little press events in Boston, and the engineer for GM was there, and he said, no, it's a generator. It's not a typical hybrid. It's a generator that runs, that recharges the battery, so it does. And then later on, we found out the same thing, that the gasoline engine would kick on, and there was some sort of probably planetary gear setup that allowed both to combine together. So, and I actually liked the Volt a lot. I thought it was a pretty nice car, and I was a little disappointed to see it go away, but I thought it was pretty good. And BMW had, I think, in their little tiny i3 car, they had sort of a two-cylinder engine that sort of did the same thing. I think when it only had about 100-mile range, but I think when the range ran down low, this little gasoline engine would kick on, and I think it charged the battery. I think that's its main job, was to charge the battery. So that kind of idea is out there. The weird thing about the BMW was I think it only had like a 2-gallon gas tank too. So you needed to go find someplace to charge up, or you needed to stop every gallon or so to refill again, but at least it gave you that option, which I think was pretty good. And going back to what you said a bit ago, it's really about acceptance of all of this and how people mentally are going to accept it, and whether it's easy for people to do. So I guess the bottom line is, it sounds like the New York Auto Show maybe wasn't what it used to be, but still worth going, right?
I would say so. I was actually pleasantly surprised at what was there. I went thinking, you know, this could very well be my last show that I go to because, you know, the manufacturers are pulling out and there's just less to see.
Yeah.
With you know, having the ability to go on the test rides, that was fun to see some of the new vehicles. You mentioned that the different chargers, the different stage chargers. Ford had a nice display of all of those, including maybe either what you're talking about or a variant of it where it had batteries, because it said, you know, in the event of a power outage, you can recharge your car for up to 3 days.
Yeah. Yep.
So there was a lot to be seen. I did find, well, I was thinking of this as you were speaking also, is nowhere did I see anything talking about hydrogen power cars.
Mm.
And you know, every now and then that rears its head and people go, oh, it's wonderful, it's this, it's that. And I don't disagree, but I go right back personally to what I saw with my CNG-powered car, which in Connecticut, thank God it was bi-fuel, because yeah, as you realize how that worked, it was dedicated to CNG first. And when the sensor saw no CNG, it would switch to the gasoline. And it did it rather efficiently.
Yeah.
But my range on the CNG, to just give you know, your listeners a little bit of an idea, was limited to maybe 130, 140. And I was driving a 50-mile one-way trip to work at the time. So I could get 1.5 trips before I had to go back to the fueling station, I should say.
Yep.
That was on the other side of the town for me. Now, luckily, my local at the time, public utility, had an external filling station, and you could get a little electric key, and you could go and fill 24/7. But the big problem with that car was, in Connecticut, there was probably only somewhere between 4 and 6 public access CNG filling stations in the whole state.
Yeah. No, so, that's yeah, all a challenge, certainly. And right. if there were hydrogen filling stations instead of compressed natural gas, it'd be the same thing. Hey, Larry, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your Sunday, especially being Easter Sunday. We need to get going. We need to take a break and pay some bills. But again, thanks so much for taking us on a tour of the New York Auto Show.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you, and I hope your listeners enjoyed some of my thoughts and comments, and we'll catch up another time.
All right. Take care, Larry. That was Larry Iden, automotive instructor, team leader, and just a generally good guy to work with. I worked with him with the Ford AAA Student Auto Skills for a bunch of years. Just a good guy to work with. We need to take a break and pay some bills. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program, and you're listening on 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
Ring in spring with the Atlantic Symphony Orchestra on Sunday, April 7th. It's ASO's Command Performance with violinist Mari Lee. A rising artist of global acclaim, Miss Lee bridges the gap between audiences, performers, and composers. The concert will include music and storytelling and feature the works of Bach, Kowalski, and more. If you love the violin, this is the concert for you. ASO's Command Performance with Mari Lee, Sunday, April 7th at 4 p.m. at Old Ship Church on Main Street in Hingham. Purchase your tickets today at AtlanticSymphony.org or call 781-331-3600. AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24/7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at AAA.com/join.
This is Dan Cloutier.
And this is Kim Jennings.
We're from Birch Bear Records. Tune in to Twilight Showcase Radio,
hosted by Sandy Stride and Keith James,
on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Search for Twilight Showcase on Facebook and visit twilightshowcase.org.
Twilight Showcase, tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
WATD. Yes, we're live on this Easter Sunday, and you're welcome to give us a call at 781-837-4900. Larry talked about his CNG dual fuel vehicle that he had. I got the opportunity to road test a Honda Civic single fuel compressed natural gas car, and it was sort of interesting. And I commuted about 100 miles round trip back and forth to work. And I drove it around a little bit, and it had like 150-mile range, 175-mile range, something like that. So I drove it around a little bit, and then I decided, since I was driving it around, I would drive it to work. I said, no problem, because right down in downtown Providence, there was a compressed natural gas filling station. I said, fantastic. I'll, you know, drive it to work, use up 50 miles or so of range, and then go charge up at the filling station. So I get to the filling station at lunchtime. There's a sign on it that says, closed. Go see us at this other place. And these were, I guess, state-run, maybe. So I drive to the second location, and it is a fenced-in area, I guess similar to what Larry was talking about. You needed probably some kind of electric key to get in to fill up, you know, with compressed natural gas. It was probably owned by, maybe it was owned by the gas company, I don't know. But it wasn't open to the public unless you had some access key to get in. So then I was like, now what do I do? And I knew there was another compressed natural gas filling station up in Westwood, or maybe it wasn't Westwood, but it was, maybe it was, I don't know, in that general area somewhere. So I had to basically drive like another 25 miles to fill up. And by the time I got there, the car registered it had about 2 miles to empty. So I pull up to the first CNG pump, and I've never filled up with CNG before. And I go in, and I can't get the nozzle to lock in because it has to, it's high pressure, so it has to lock in. I'm like, oh, great, now what? So I pull around to the other side of the pump. That one worked fine. I don't know if the first one had some electrical glitch or it had been dropped and it was damaged, whatever the case was. The second one clicked right in and filled up the tank in probably just 3 or 4 minutes. It cost me about a third of the price of gasoline, what it would have cost to fill up a gasoline car. So it was pretty interesting. But again, without the infrastructure, it doesn't make sense. And it's not like there was any push at the time to put CNG outlets at people's homes. I mean, you have natural gas at your house if you have a gas stove or a gas water heater or furnace or whatever, but there wasn't any big push to do that. So it was sort of a little interesting using that. The other thing that I was just reading a article, and it said, it was talking about, do electric cars ever need a jump start? Yes, they absolutely do. We do it not all the time, but we do it once in a while. So what do you do? And the one that, and it said, can you jump start an electric car? And the one that was pretty interesting, and yes, you can jump start an electric car, because the 12-volt battery, and nearly every electric car has a 12-volt battery, except for the new Tesla Cybertruck, which I think has a 48-volt battery. But nearly every electric vehicle has a 12-volt battery. And the 12-volt battery runs things like some of the accessories, turns the dashboard on, stuff like that. So you have to go find the low voltage battery, and they're a lot of times in different spaces. They don't look like what you expect them to look like. Even the 12 volt battery in a Prius looks like it should be a battery for sort of a emergency lighting battery. It's a little small thing. So can you jump it? Yeah. Should you jump it with another car? Probably not. I would rather use one of those portable jump start devices. They work pretty well. Or a regular, you know, like we use at AAA. We don't use the compact lithium ion jump starters. We use a little bit bigger, a little bulkier, a little more heavy duty 12 volt jump start that uses a lead acid battery in it, because we feel better about doing that. We feel better about using a 12-volt lead-acid battery versus a little tiny lithium-ion battery that puts out a lot of voltage that may do some damage. So we use the old style. But any one of these will probably work okay. So then you need to find it. Well, the one that I thought was pretty interesting was Tesla. If the 12-volt battery is dead and the doors are locked, you can't get in to open the hood or trunk or frunk or whatever you want to call it. So how do you get into it? Well, Tesla thought that through. And in the front of the car, there is a where a lot of European cars and some of the Japanese cars and maybe even my Korean car, I don't know, has a place where you can attach a tow hook. So you take this little plastic cover on the bumper and you can take it off and you screw this thing in and you can use it to tow the vehicle. In that space on the Tesla, there's two little wires. So you pull the wires out, and there's a red and a black one, and you hook up your jumpstart device to the red and black one. And it's not meant to jumpstart the car, but what it's meant to is power up the car enough so you can pop open the hood or trunk or frunk or whatever it's called. So they actually thought that through, which I thought was pretty good. So you can jumpstart the low voltage battery, power up the ignition, and the car will start the way it should. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I want to tell a little story about Amazon. Everybody buys from Amazon. Jesse, are you a big Amazon customer?
I do my fair share.
Fair share. Do you ever get ripped off by Amazon or the seller?
No, never.
No. Well, I've said before, I have this little small boat. And I was on the Facebook boat page and people said, take off the four-bladed prop that's on the boat, put on a three-bladed prop, go just about 3/4 inch bigger, go a little different pitch, and it'll transform the boat. It will make it perform better. And I'm like, well, it was like better performance, and it was late at night, and a email and our text or whatever Facebook messaging the person said, what brand did you use? And he gave me the brand to use, and so I go on Amazon and I order it. It's like $75. And then he goes, oh, I forgot to tell you, you need to order this hub kit because the hub's a little bit different than what belongs on there. So you're going to have to order this extra kit. It's not very expensive, and it'll make it so it fits right. I'm like, oh, okay. So I was talking to my neighbor who's a marine mechanic, and I said to him, hey, I'm thinking about getting this prop. And he says, only make sure, just get the original Mercury prop. You don't want to take a chance with some of these aftermarket ones. Some of them are just made really poorly. They're not balanced properly. You want to get the Mercury one. So I go back online to Amazon, and the prop I was going to order was made by a company called the Young Prop Company, Y-O-U-N-G, Prop Company. And it looked like a good product, made in China, shipped from China, I guess, and had a pretty quick turnaround with the normal, Amazon free shipping, not Prime, because I don't buy enough from there, but I'm not a Prime member. It was going to show up in like 5 days. But I canceled it because that my neighbor's voice was in my head going, don't get that one, don't get that one. So I go on what is Mercury's Amazon page, and it has a bunch of different resellers under the page. So I go, I kind of look, and I find my size prop, and I order it. And different with Amazon, normally, as soon as you do that, you get an email from Amazon, which I did. And then normally right after that, it's like, shipping labels made. It's been, shipped, and you get it in, 4 or 5 days. Well, I got the email that said the label was made, but I didn't get the, if you trace it, it didn't say it was shipped. I'm like, that's odd. Why is it taking 4 or 5 days to ship it? Well, finally it got shipped, and then it says it's going to be here on Friday. Well, it wasn't here on Friday. Then on Monday, It's I got an email that says it'll be there, or Sunday night maybe. I got an email that said it'll be there somewhere between Monday and Wednesday, and if it's not there by Wednesday, you can cancel the order. And that was from Amazon, not from the reseller. And it showed up on Tuesday morning. So I'm all happy. And I go take it out of the box, and it's first off, it's not a Mercury box, which Mercury has this fancy logo. It's just a plain old cardboard box. Then I take it out, and it looks good, but the hub kit, the plot that holds the prop in place, is different than the factory one. Is it different? Wrong? No, it's just different. It looks like every other hub kit on every other Evinrude or Yamaha or whatever. It's a rubber, solid rubber thing with a bushing in the middle of it. Does the same thing. So I'm like, wait a second. This isn't even a Mercury prop. So I suspect, and I don't know this, but I suspect the way this person's website was, you ordered what you thought was a Mercury part. They ordered the Chinese one, which this was identical to the Chinese one. They get it shipped to them. And they repackage it poorly. And it was interesting. On the side of the label on the box, it said, this fits this. And they covered up that label with a fragile sticker. I peeled it off and saw that it absolutely wasn't a Mercury part, even though it was portrayed that on the Amazon page with the Mercury picture and all that sort of stuff, the right style thing. So I ended up calling Amazon and saying, hey, look, you know, I think you have a fraudulent reseller. They're selling something that isn't what they portray it to be. And they ended up saying, you know, you can return it. And I said, well, that's kind of the problem. I want to try this to see if it works. And they said, well, how about this? Is this satisfactory? We'll refund your money and you just keep it. Which, okay. But it still isn't what I wanted. And I don't know. Have you ever been ripped off by Amazon like that? It's not ripped off by Amazon. It's ripped off by somebody who was selling on Amazon's website. It was pretty disappointing. It's the first time that's ever happened. Although I did just order two oil filters for my car, and my car was made in Alabama, by the way. It's a Hyundai made in Alabama, and I've always used Hyundai oil filters because I truly believe there is a difference in them. If I didn't use one, I get a little clatter first thing in the morning. The Hyundai oil filter doesn't do that. So I order Hyundai oil filters. The last two I got actually said not for sale outside of Korea, which I thought was a little weird. But it's a perfect factory filter. It's, for whatever reason, not for sale outside of Korea. Let's take another break. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening to 95.9 WATD on this Easter morning. Our phone number, if you want to join us, 781-837-4900. We'll be right back.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Stop painting and renovating.
Since 1986, One Stop Painting has been true to its name. The one stop you need to make for all your interior and exterior painting needs. That's 1986, 38 years. Some of our customers today weren't even born when we were painting their moms and dad's homes. And painting isn't all we do. Sure, we can freshen up your house and add some new colors and washable finishes to the walls, but we can also do carpentry, such as adding crown molding or wainscoting, wall and plaster repairs, fix water and smoke damage. We can even help with insurance claims. For nearly 4 decades, we've taken on all projects, large and small, commercial and residential, and given you the same one-stop attention to detail, no matter the size or price of the job. We are a family-run company responsible for over 30 employees. Your business helps us take care of their families while our employees take care of yours. Help keep them busy throughout the winter by taking advantage of some of our big seasonal discounts. Call us at 508-888-3500 or check us out online at onestoppainting.com.
One Stop Painting and Renovating.
Hey there, folks. It's Quinn Kelly reminding you to tune in Sunday night at 5 for the South Shore's first voice in sports talk radio, The Sports Exchange. Unmatched coverage of local high school action, as well as a relatable voice on all things Boston Pro Sports, we've got you covered live at 5 every Sunday night. Have a question for our host, missed last week's show, or just want to share a great sports story? You can find us on Twitter, at SE on WATD. But remember, mark your calendar, folks, and we'll see you Sunday night at 5 for the Sports Exchange on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to everybody on hold, but let's talk to Tom in Kingston. Good morning, Tom.
I'll hit you up quick. 2014 Volkswagen Jetta. There's being a draw from the battery causing the battery to go dead. Do you think of anything that might cause it?
The last one that I remember seeing was the pump for the emissions pressure system test. Would stay running sometimes when the vehicle wasn't on. That would do it. But the best way to do it, though, is really, you know, take a voltmeter and do start pulling fuses. You know, hook up the voltmeter so you can watch it start pulling fuses. Then when you get to the fuse, that's the issue. Take your voltmeter, put it across it, look at amperage on that, and then try to guess what off of that fuse can draw that. Really the only way. But I remember the emission pump on some of those were an issue. And then of course, look for goofy stuff, you know, dome lights that come on and stuff. You know, go out and look at it at night. Make sure nothing's on.
Would you hear that pump?
No, it's dead quiet.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Any other thing, any batteries you would recommend to get?
You mean besides,
like Interstate, like
besides the AAA battery that we sell?
Well, AAA is Interstate, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. Interstate's really, it's kind of funny, Interstate's really a marketing company. Most of Interstate batteries are made by the company that used to be Johnson Controls, which now is, for some reason, just jumped out of my head, which is the same company that used to make diehards back in the old days.
Are we really talking $200 for a battery now?
In a lot of cases, $170, AAA's price, I think, maybe just went up a little bit, but like $185 delivered to your house and installed. I bought a battery for my wife's Volkswagen that sits here in Florida. I bought it at the local Walmart because I wanted to get it right away. It was $200, but it was $100 cheaper than going to AutoZone, so...
Yeah, crazy.
There you go. Hey, we got to get going. Hey, have a happy Easter. All right. All right,
bye-bye.
You as well. Bye-bye. We need to step aside for now. Until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car, and if you see an emergency vehicle by the side of the road, slow down or move over. It saves lives. Happy Easter, everyone. Happy Easter, Jesse. Talk to everyone next week. Bye-bye.